George, who will be our speaker for this evening.
Yay, George. I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George. I am going to review the eighth tradition where we ended up last week. We're going to start with the long form of the eighth tradition. The short form is pretty simple, and we were talking about all different kinds of ways of organizing or non-organizing, and about special, what is special service centers and committees and all that good stuff. I'm going to get into organizational lack thereof in nine, and they kind of all tie together. And in eight, the short form starts off with Alcoholics Anonymous to remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. What's a special worker? We're kind of talking about that, the different hats we wear. There are people that work in the industry. When they work in the industry, they work in the industry. They're not an AA counselor. They're not an AA therapist. In Alcoholics Anonymous, they're just an AA, just a member. And when they're working, they're just carrying the message of wherever they work. So, you know, how do you figure out where we go with that? If you read the long form of Tradition A, which I really, it makes the long forms of the tradition makes the tradition so much clearer than the short forms in most cases. Tradition 8 reads, Alcoholics Anonymous remain forever non-professional. Do we define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire? But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform these services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. So it tells you that we have a right to go out and work in any field we want, but if we're doing 12-step work, we don't get paid. A little review of that, and in the 12-step illustrated, it says, spiritual as it is, AA remains very much of this world. The eighth tradition, like the seventh, focuses on the vulgar five-letter word that is actually not mentioned in either, money. Many of us had to explain some of this critical prospect. I'm not a social worker. I don't get paid for talking with you. I'm doing it because it's the best way to stay sober myself. It became clear to the early AA members that no AA should ever ask or accept payment for carrying the message to somebody else, person to person, face to face. In the fourth edition, forward to the fourth edition, it now says modem to modem, which I think is very important that we carry that, because it's just another way that we carry the message, and this group does that very well. But new questions arose as membership grew, and the World of Hope spared sending thousands of alcoholics in search for AA for the first intergroup, or central offices were usually managed by AA volunteers. Now, most such offices are busy with full-time employers, are needed as well. Naturally, AAs are better suited for such jobs than non-members. But are those AAs being paid for doing 12-step work? The answer to that is no. In the office, they are just being paving the way for AA work, arranging to get a sick drunk to a hospital, telling a shaky newcomer that the nearest meeting is for that night. They are hoping to make it possible for an alcoholic to hear the message person to person, face to face. The similar development has taken place in the fellowship's headquarters. Once a tiny office, and one of our founders, which was Bill and his secretary, that was it. It has grown on to be the present general service office, fully staffed with a big mail room to keep lines of communications open throughout the AA worldwide. The employees, both AA and non-alcoholic, are paid from the scale compatible to that of a profit-making enterprise, so the office may function dependently. In these office jobs, as in other assignments, members of AA actually paid for their business and professional skills. Working a GSO desk on conference-proof books and pamphlets, or the general, or the grapevine, these AAs use their abilities for correspondence, managers, writers, editors, artists, proofreaders, as well as their understanding of AA from the inside. A good example of that, last week we talked about Bill writing a pamphlet and getting actual royalty and some of the things he wrote, not talking about the big book, different set of circumstances there. But he actually wrote one of the pamphlets, and he actually got a royalty for being a writer. And then it talks about, on the occasions, he volunteers. give their time and talent to these services, and their contributions are deeply appreciated. But if it was a fellowship decided that such arrangements should be handled only by unpaid volunteers, in present day, it would be too great a volume of work to be done in the spare hours here and there, and only the rich and the retired could afford to work full time. If we try to find in this limited group people qualified for particular tasks, obviously the field would have been narrowed down too often, down to nobody at all. Most volunteers do the work because nobody else wants to do it. That's how we end up becoming volunteers in Alcoholics Anonymous. There would be another problem using volunteers alone, and it means that we couldn't fire them, because if somebody's donating their time, we try to be nice to them. When you get paid, you can get fired. It's a nice thing to know they have that worked into the tradition. Or at least somebody socially awkward to criticize or reject a job done for free, paid jobs for A, get quite a going over. Take the literature, the pamphlets, whatever the subject, we want to be sure that each piece expresses as clearly as possible the view of the group conscience of AA as a whole. So any new project may first be approved by the conference. Once in this process, the literature committee of the General Service Boards keep a careful eye on it. At every stage, frequently drastic changes are required. When finished, the project must return to be okayed by both the committee and then the conference literature committee, and the full version is then offered. Now, wait a minute. One old-timer would interrupt, and that would be Dr. Bob. He said, aren't we supposed to keep this simple? Now, the reason that I'm going into this way is because when we get to 9, we're going to see that we are organized, but we're really not organized. The questions we can ask ourselves as we end 8 and swing into 9, and it comes out of the checklist of the 12 traditions checklist. Tradition 8 says alcohol should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. My own behavior accurately described by the tradition, if not, what needs changing? If I am not practicing unity in the first tradition, I've got to start changing that real quick. When I'm defiant, rebellious in the middle of an AA meeting because I want my point of view across, rather than being harmonious with the group, then I'm heading for trouble as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I'm not letting a loving God run the meeting, I'm really in trouble, because then I'm in control again. If I'm not practicing, the only requirement is a desire. Who can describe what someone's desire is? If I'm not letting the group being self-governing, if I'm not carrying the message, now we're already up to the fifth tradition. I just went through the first 5 real easy. If I start letting money, property, and prestige divert me from what I'm doing here, again, I am not following the traditions. If we're not self-supporting, and self-supporting is not always about money, it's about the way we do service in a lot of cases. The only time that money and spirituality mix is in the basket they used to talk about in AA. If I'm not following that by not giving when I can, or trying to show everybody how much I can give when I can't, you know, that's things I have to look at, because that goes back to the 6th. And then we get to the 8th, where there's special workers for whatever reason. If you went to the convention this last weekend, we had signers. That's a special workers' need. Some of them may be Alcoholics Anonymous members, and some of them may not. But there's a need for that for the people who can't, who need signers to hear the message. So we do that, and we hire those special workers for those purposes, and we pay them accordingly. Which, when we talked about my friend Tom the fireman, we didn't pay him accordingly. We tried to nickel and dime him to death. So that's a real important question. When I complain about a particular tradition, do I realize how it affects all the others in the group and all the other traditions as well? Do I sometimes try to get some reward, even not if not money, for personal AA effort? Do I try to sound like an AA expert on alcoholism, on recovery, on medicine, on sociology, on AA itself, on psychiatry, or on spiritual matters, or heaven help me, even on humility? It's a big one on that 8th tradition. Do I make an effort to understand what AA employees do, what workers do other alcoholism agencies do? Can I distinguish clearly among them the difference between working in Alcoholics Anonymous itself and working at a treatment center? They both are public information, but they're done two different ways. They're actually done two different ways. Although they may look alike, they're not alike. Have I paid enough attention to the book the 12 steps and 12 traditions to the pamphlet AA tradition and how it developed, or even the little one that I like to read out of a lot, AA, the 12 traditions illustrated. If I can answer those questions, I really am now ready to move on to 9. And we just really covered 8 traditions. And when we get to this 9th tradition, which is one of my favorites, they're all my favorites, every week I want to say that. But the 9th tradition really is, because we're going to go back and forth, because it talks about something that I believe I started basing my program in, and when I get to it, I'm going to talk about it. It talks about what a member, why we're here in a different way, at least for me. Tradition 9 states, AA is such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards and committees directly responsible to those they serve. This one is a puzzler to a lot of people. How can you have a society that is unorganized at the same time organized services, yet AA does that? Think about any kind of business that there is. There is a structure. Believe it or not, there is a structure in AA, but it doesn't look that way. I'd like to like what Bill calls it, a benign anarchy. We have a benign anarchy going on in this place. It's very quiet. There's a lot of, it looks like it's chaotic, but it's really not. It's really a very strict structural form that goes on here. And but it says, when Tradition 9 was first written, it said Alcoholics Anonymous needs the least possible organization. In the years since, they have changed our minds to today, where we're able to say with assurance that Alcoholics Anonymous, A as a whole, should never be organized at all. Yet we are. So how can we say we shouldn't be, but we are? There's that paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let go, but hold on. You know, hold on and let go. Easy does it, but do it. You know, there's so many different things that we can listen to when we hear the steps that we're told to do about the paradoxes. And this is one of those paradoxes. The 9th tradition was a very big paradox. Then, in seeming contradiction, we proceed to create special boards and committees with which themselves are organized. How can we have such an unorganized movement which can and does create service organizations for itself? Scanning this puzzle, people say, what do they mean? No organization. What we really mean, of course, is that AA can never have an organized direction or government. To amplify this, did anyone ever hear of a nation, a church, a political party, or even a benevolent association that had no membership rules? We go back, it says the only requirement for membership is desire to stop drinking. That means we don't have a right in here to throw anybody out. It's one of the big ones. AA throws nobody out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, groups may have rules under the 4th tradition because they're self-governing. If someone's behavior is inappropriate enough, that it's disruptive enough, they may ask them to find another meeting, but they don't throw them out of AA. They may throw them out of the location they're at. That's one of those things that'll drive a lot of people crazy. You can't throw me out, I'm a member. Well, you'll find those members show up somewhere else and stay sober. Maybe not in this group or in another group, but they may get thrown out of one location because of their behavior. And we don't have a right to tell anybody what their behavior is. What anybody did, is doing, or is going to do is really none of our business. And we'll talk about that in Tradition 10. But that is a hard thing. If we sat here and chose the people that we thought weren't going to relapse, and if they relapsed more than 3 times, we said, you're not allowed back in Alcoholics Anonymous, where would be the loving openness that we have? So there's a lot of things that go on in here that we do inherently, because I think these traditions are already infiltrating our lives as we do the steps. It talks about that anyone here of a society could not somehow discipline its members and enforce obedience to necessary rules and regulations. Does not nearly every society on earth give authority to some of its members to impose in every nation? In fact, from in every form of authority has to have a government administrated by human beings. Power to direct and govern is the essence of an organization's everywhere, but not true with us. We do have an ultimate authority, and that's the love of God. That's our authority. There is actually 2 authorities, and we're going to talk about it. They talk about it in the 4th tradition. They say one is benign and one is malign. One is alcohol, which says, if you don't do God's will, I'm going to get you. And the other is God himself, who says, I'm waiting for you to do my will. And that's your choice. In the 4th tradition, when we go back to Tradition 4, and I did mark that off because it really does have a lot to do with where we are right now in going through this. It says, we begin to obey the traditions for three reasons, basically. We obey them because we think they're right for us. So at this point, we start knowing what's right for us within the rooms. We obey the principle because we think they're good principles. So we start obeying because they're good for us. First, they're right for us. Then they're good for us. Then there's the third one, which we don't talk about a lot. The final level of obedience, and it's the best of all. We obey the steps and tradition. It says steps and tradition because we really want them for ourselves. And that's really what we start doing, you know, as we stay in here long enough and start going through these traditions. There's a thing in here that talks about an old-timer who leaves and goes to a different town. And he decides that he's going to tell AA how to run it. And I think of a guy I know who's up in Connecticut now, who moved out of his area. And when he moved to the new area, he didn't think AA was running right in the area he went to. So he's going to show them how to do it. And eventually, they kind of sat him down and told him, listen, this is the way we do it. And you're either going to conform to us, or you can start another group. Well, he eventually conformed to them. And there's a guy in here that they talk about that has a group, and he likes it, and he's starting, he puts a blurb. They talk in the old days about putting blurbs in the paper. He starts the group, he gets all his friends together, and they start building this powerful meeting. And the young people come in, and all of a sudden the young people are now turning around and saying, well, we don't like the way the meeting's run, let's have an election. And they have this election, and the old timer is forced out, and the old timer is now very angry. And he tries to fight for his position back. And he's fighting with the group about telling them they're not doing it right. And if you don't do this, you're going to get drunk. And I always think of Bill and Hank Parkhurst when they used to sit and tell somebody when they come in, well, you didn't lose your house. You didn't hit a bottom low enough. You're not ready to get sober. Or they'd sit there and say, this guy's going to make it or this guy's going to not. And they used to sit there and judge people. And when you think about that, how many of us sit in the room and do that? And when we sit and do that, what we're really doing is we're really not going to be carrying the message anymore. What we're doing is we're being very opinionated in our opinions, and we're going to talk about that next week. Have the ability to kill people, let us say. You've got to be real careful with those opinions. You know, when it comes to medicine, when it comes to psychiatry, we're not those things. We're here to help a drunk not pick up a drink. Really, that's what we're here for. And the spiritual path that we take to do that varies amongst us tremendously. When we get to that, now this old timer gets real mad, and the 12 and 12 and the and AA comes of age, they talk about the two kinds of people you're going to meet in Alcoholics Anonymous, the bleeding deacon and the elder statesman. And we kind of talked a little bit about it in tradition four because of the two authorities, and that's what, you know, but we need both. Don't ever think we don't need the guy who says you got to do this, this, and this. And then the guy who sits in the back, who everybody thinks is sleeping because we didn't know what serenity looked like when we got here, at least I didn't. So, well, man, he just comes in the room and goes to sleep for an hour. No, he's not going to sleep for an hour. He's just at such peace that nothing bothers him. And he always comes up with these great answers when you got a problem. Oh, just don't drink and go to a meeting. He's saying a lot more than that, but that's what we hear. He's saying a lot more than that, but that's what we hear. Don't drink and go to meetings. You know, he's telling you this is where the answer is. And in a different way. But he has a different way about going. And then now the group is in a problem. And when the group has this problem, who do they go to? They go to that guy that was sitting in the back that we all thought was sleeping. And we say, there's a problem. What do we do? And he's usually the informed voice of the group conscience. And it talks about another tradition. And you know, this is all tying into the ninth tradition about the non-organization and what we do with this and how it shows itself in tradition nine. And he's usually the guy who's the voice of reason. Now, we need the guy from the left of center, and we need the guy on the right of center, on the far extreme, because without it, we never find the middle. And that's what we're searching for, is that middle point. And the guy who tells you, you better do this, this, or this, or you're going to get drunk, versus the guy who says, you can do whatever you want to do. We talk about the promoter on one side, and we talk about keeping it simple. If you had Bill's way of doing things, we would be all over the world in hospitals and all kinds of places. And if you had Dr. Bob's world, we'd still be sitting in one living room in Akron, Ohio. We need both to find that middle point to get here. In the 12 and 12 and on Tradition 9, there's a part, and it says, it talks about the juncture we're at in this ninth tradition. It says, at this juncture you hear churchmen exclaim they are making disobedience a virtue, because now you have the people who are running amok doing whatever they want, And then you have the other people who are the disciplinarians telling them, if you do this, you're going to get drunk. We don't know who's going to get drunk and who's not. We don't have that power. If we knew that, I think every one of us in this room would sit and watch the people walk in the room, say, I know he's going to be sober. I'm going to sponsor this one. I'm going to sponsor that one. And we're going to really look good about that. We don't know. Our job is to carry the message. What someone does with that message is none of our business. That was hard for me to learn when I got here. So it says, defiant brats. They won't grow up and conform to social usages. The man in the street says, I don't understand it. They must be nuts. But all these observers have overlooked one very unusual condition in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is what I believe today I try to base my program in. And that was given to me when I first got here by the name of Bob Welsh, who used to say, unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps of recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. Drunkenness and disintegration are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They are a result of his disobedience to spiritual principle. We must obey certain principles or we die. It's really that simple. Either I do this, either God is everything or he's nothing. What's the choice to be? I hear that when I did my steps. I read that in the big book. I didn't believe it, but I did it anyway, and I didn't believe in God when I got here. So my journey through the steps led me to the power that worked in this room through a loving God in the second tradition, which eventually led me to the unity to be part of you guys and stop being apart and being defiant. So that process that went on in that ninth tradition, which continues to grow for me, all has to do with my obedience to spiritual principles. First I did them because they were good for me, then I did them because I liked them, and now I like the obedience that they give me. So I try to live them on a regular basis. The same stern threat applies to the group itself. Unless the appropriate conformity to AA's 12 tradition, the group too can deteriorate and die. We talked about way back in tradition two of groups that started that there was a lot of personalities, and eventually those groups, the doors shut. And many groups that I've been since I've been around that I've watched doors actually close because people became someone's particular meeting, it became a personality meeting rather than a principle meeting. They didn't practice principles, they practiced personalities. And eventually those personalities got so big that either the group split or it died. There's a room not too far down, a little bit further north of here, that because of it, there was an outgrowth of another 12:15 meeting. There's a room that's up the road here. Not this particular group, but the 12 o'clock meeting here in this particular room grew out of a need because other groups were getting too big and people were not carrying a message. The meetings were mostly personalities, and what we're supposed to be doing is carrying spiritual principles. It says, so we of AA do obey spiritual principles. First, because we must, and ultimately because we love the kind of life such obedience brings. Great suffering and great love are AA's disciplinarians. We need no others. Now, if we think about how we got here, I came in here on great suffering. I didn't think I was suffering, but when I got here, I realized I was suffering. Then I realized how I treated everybody else, and then I even was suffering more. You know, in AA, I woke up and realized that my behavior was not only hurting me, it was affecting everybody in my life. And as I stayed here and worked my way through steps, traditions were already infiltrating my life. On the way over here, we were talking about how I got here, you know, did I come in here on steps? I believe I got in here on traditions, because the very first day I got here, I was a greeter, I was a coffee maker, I was a chair setter, we used to have glass coffee cups at the place, mugs, I used to have to wash out coffee mugs. I had to sneak in the name of my halfway house on a Wednesday night and clean up the room and not tell anybody. Those are how I came into AA, and because of that, and I liked the people because they remembered my name. The biggest thing I remember from my first meeting is somebody said, welcome and please come back. You're helping a lot of people. And I joke about that helping a lot of people. It took me a while. And one day I leaned over to Bob. I said, Bob, how am I helping all these people? He says, you're teaching them how not to behave. Yeah. And I was really not very stable when I got here. Not the person that sits here today. Somebody was talking about, you know, can I picture me the way I was? I don't remember that person too much, but I know he's right under the skin. And if I don't follow the spiritual principles, he will come right back up. And if he comes back up, I get drunk. So it's the vigilance that I was taught in the steps that led me to the principles. Now, how do I do that? Because I am organized. I get up in the morning, I pray. I go to a meeting, I call my sponsor. These are the things I do. Very organized in how I live my life today. But this, it's a spiritual organization. It's not, I got to get up and go to work and do this and do this. I have to get up and talk to God first. So it says in here that great suffering and great love are our disciplinarians. Therefore, it is now clear that we ought never name boards to govern us. It is equally clear, however, we shall always need authorized workers to serve us. Here we discriminate between the spirit of the vested authority and the spirit of service, concepts which are sometimes pulled apart. There's the letter of the law and there's the spirit of the law, and I don't think we talk about it enough anywhere in this fellowship. The letter of the law is the things that are written down. I mean, I grew up in a certain religion, and there was over 500 certain laws for ways of killing animals and eating food. There's other laws that are given in other religions, and those are religious laws. Those are laws. Those are rules and regulations we're supposed to follow. That's the letter of the law. And if I didn't follow that, there was a guy upstairs keeping account on me. The spirit of the law is something totally different. It's about the goodness of heart. And, I try and live by the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. I don't think I can follow the letter of the law 100%. I don't think any of us can follow the letter of the law. I'm not that good. I didn't come to AA to get good. I came in here to start getting well. If I'm trying to get good, I don't know if I'll stay here. I don't know about anybody else. But it's not about getting good anymore. It's not about, because I know how to follow rules if I wanted something. But what about following rules because it's good for me? That was hard. You know, like when my sponsor said, call me every day and let me know what's going on, and I'd find an excuse not to call, he was giving me a suggestion, which in my case he told me was a definite rule, because if I didn't call, I could find someone else to work with who wanted what I had because he didn't. So I used to hear these things and didn't understand that these were spiritual disciplines that I needed to get through. So I was being spiritually disciplined. And that's a hard thing. So I have to determine between the spirit of authority, which was very hard for me, and service and concepts, which pulls apart for me. Because I see that as being told what to do. But there it's really not. It's just very strong suggestions. It is the spirit of service that we elect the AA's group in formal rotating committees. The group associations, the area, the general service conference, for AA as the whole, even our trustees, once an independent body, the total directly accountable to our fellowship. They are the caretakers and the expediters of our world services. Just as the aim of each AA member is personal sobriety, that's our aim. When I got in here, I just didn't want to hurt, and I didn't want to pick up a drink or a drug. In that case, it was either or. I wanted my kids back. I didn't come in for those reasons, but that's why I started staying. The aim of our service is to bring the society within reach to all who want it. There's a part in the book, it says in the big book that I always hang on to. It says, for those who are willing and able, little charity in the normal sense is warranted or needed. And what that was taught to me to mean is for those who want to get sober, there is no suggestion that is too big that any sponsor can give them. For those who don't, the simplest thing, like making a phone call, is beyond their reach. So when, you know, they said when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, or when the willing become as desperate as they can be, there's a whole lot of little cliches that work so well for me in that. Because when I was willing, there was nothing my sponsor asked me to do. I may have squawked, I may have balked, I may have told them I didn't want to do it, but I did it in spite of all that. And somehow I got a wonderful spiritual discipline from that. So it says, if nobody did the group's chores, if the area's telephone rang unanswered, if we did not rely on our mail, then AA, as we know it, would stop. A communications line with those who need our help would be broken. There's a thing on page 128 in the big book, giving rather than getting becomes our guiding principle. And how do we give? How do we give without telling people what they need to do? How do we step back and let people be who they are, right where they are, just the way they are, and love them, whether we agree with them or not? That's hard work for someone like me. I don't know about anybody else in this room, but that was really tough stuff for me to learn. So when it comes to how we function, there's the very last paragraph, I think it's in the 12 and 12 in tradition 9, it says, while AA has to function, it must at the same time avoid wealth, prestige, and power, the great dangers which necessarily tempt nearly all human societies. Tradition 9 at first seems to deal with purely practical matters. It embodies a deep spirituality in its actual operation. It is, as AA is a society without organization, animated only by the spirit of service. That's what this fellowship is about, the spirit of service. That's the true fellowship we're talking about, the true love that this fellowship has for one another. There's people in this room that I don't know, there's people in this room I like, and I'm sure there's people in this room I probably don't like. And whether I like them or not, doesn't matter. If they're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, once we walk in here, it doesn't matter whether I like you or not. If you're in here for help, I'm supposed to reach out and be of service. The best any one of us in this room will ever be is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if we stay here and do what was laid out in front of us, the best we'll ever get is to be a servant, to serve someone else as someone served us before us. Freely we give, freely we receive, we talked about in the 8th tradition. So it talks about this in AA Comes of Age, that this situation, the situation came down to that they were going to turn over the fellowship the next day to Alcoholics Anonymous itself, and that's why it went from ought never to we're never going to organize in that sense. And then the next day, Bill and Bob turned the fellowship to the fellowship itself. And since then, I don't think we've ever looked back. So we became a true fellowship, and that's when they talk about AA grows up. The 9th tradition is key into why we grew up. Next week, we're going to talk about the 10th tradition, and we're going to talk about a whole lot of stuff about outside opinions where we don't have any. But let me tell you, inside of Alcoholics Anonymous, there are plenty of inside opinions. And those opinions can kill people. And I said that before, and I know that from my personal experience, and I'm going to use one of those experiences that happened to me in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I wanted to be a good AA, and I was listening to people that didn't know what they were talking about. And we got to be careful of what opinions we put out there. And if we want to know what the information is, it's written. It's all there for us to find. We just got to dig it out. So when we get to Tradition 9, we're talking about the least possible organization. We're talking about a loving God and all the other traditions. I guess I ran through all 8 of them getting up to this. And it's a quick way of reviewing all 9. And in the first 5, we affirmed a lot of things. And the next 7, we're giving up a lot of things. But just like the steps, if we look at it, each tradition is building on the next and making the one before it stronger, so the one that comes after it can be walked into with some, I'd like to say, meat behind it, because we have some experience now. Thanks for letting me share on tradition.